6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. This is Chris at Light Force, joined virtually by Matt Lee at Matt Lee underscore 61, Anna Forsythe at A4Sy03, still on the long-term injured reserve. Thankfully, we are getting cap relief. It is Adam Ovenell Carter at Adam FOC. And one final thing before I go and ask the two of you how you're doing. You are now listening to us on full press coverage. That is correct. We have found a new home. We have to thank Overtime Media for having us along for the ride over the past year, but we have moved on to bigger and better things. Full press coverage, which you can find at fullpresscoverage.com, provides you access to every sports topic imaginable. This network is huge, and we are now coming to you live from full press coverage, as I mentioned. So that out of the way, Matt, what's new and exciting in your neck of the woods?
Well, you know, just living the same dream. Sorry I wasn't available in last week's episode, but good to be chatting with you all once again.
Did you listen to last week's episode at all?
Oh, I did. The Minnesota preview.
Where we slide you off quite a lot.
I don't know. I download.
I don't listen. I need critical thing, go. Right?
I was going to say, Anna and I had so much fun. I think it was like, looking at the metrics here, our listeners loved it. They consumed that episode. Like, I think we get better numbers when we take shots at Matt, or we get better numbers when Matt's not here. I'm not entirely sure of the correlation between the two.
Well, hopefully our guest today will help bring up the listens even more than the record-breaking episode that you guys had last week.
Mm-hmm. But before we talk about this guest, Anna, how about you? What's new in your neck?
In my neck? Yeah. I'm okay, considering. I do want to just say it would be remiss of us not to mention the context in which we're recording in, the wider global context. Over the weekend, I'm sure all of you saw the protests that were happening. It's anti-police brutality directly in response to George Floyd's murder. But yeah, it's definitely a scary time. But yeah, we just wanted to put it out there that, you know, for us, like, just to put it very simply, Black Lives Matter. We as a sport, as hockey, could be doing a ton more. Society could be doing a ton more. And that's what we as a podcast stand for. And we're lucky that we have such great listeners who kind of follow us in that message. They're respectful. They're great people. So, yeah, I just wanted to reiterate that, and know you guys feel the same way.
Yeah, and I mean, on that note, I mean, our podcast, we have a very real privilege where we're able to talk about the Vancouver Canucks for fun, and we get to meet weekly to talk about those kind of things. But again, like Anna mentioned, we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge the very real issues that are happening in the world. And I'm glad that we're all collectively trying to make that effort to shine a light on these issues, and hopefully we can come out of it all the better. So I mean, racism exists in 2020, and it's something that we've ignored for a very long time, and I think that what we've been doing up until this point hasn't worked. And I'm very obviously sad to see what's happening, but I'm also very heartened to see that there's an opportunity for us to all educate ourselves and learn more.
And I think for me and my purview is that we talked about this a little bit off air, but I truly hope the world sees this as the impetus to change. I have doubts, unfortunately, but if I can't implore the world itself to change, what I can do is focus on what I can change. And I am taking my own self to task if I don't speak up to do what I can to stop what I see is you know, blatant disregard to human rights. Like, everyone deserves an opportunity to live a long life. And we're seeing far too many, in this case, Black lives being taken away just for absolutely, you know, no reason beyond the color of their skin. And that is just abhorrent. Like, for me, I come from a position of privilege. I was born white and I was born male. And that happened. So what I need to do is I need to make sure I'm the tip of the spear, finding ways to address that, because I myself am part of that problem.
On a completely unrelated note, us here at the C4 podcast, we want to also extend our thoughts to a longtime listener of ours, Nexus 187 on Discord. Friend of ours, really, and he's been a longtime listener of the podcast, going through some family tragedies right now. We don't want to really get too much into it, but we do want to extend our condolences to him and let him know that we are thinking of him at this time. Again, Nexus is a huge supporter of the C4 podcast, one of the many, the thousands, as Chris would say, the thousands of listeners. And he's been one of the most vocal ones of ours as well. He's really on the top of our mind as well during these times as well. So we wanted to wish our positive thoughts to him.
The thing that I hope that we can do with this particular episode is provide you that opportunity to focus on hockey. We know that hockey is a topic that helps bring us together. I was commenting to my wife how, you know, I'm sort of coming around to this idea that would be kind of nice to have hockey on the TV, if only to be able to unplug my brain from everything else that is happening in this world, because the anxiety is real. So knowing that that was, you know, an important need, and our hope is that our podcast can help you, think about hockey a little bit more. We went out and got a special guest, and I had actually asked in gate 16, who this special guest might be. There was a suggestion that it might be the Dad Lee. I mean, I'd hoped it was going to be the Dad Lee, but I understand he's still shy.
Yeah, and he's not doing media obligations right now.
Still too busy blaming Roberto Luongo for the failed cup adventure of 2011.
Wow.
So,
well, someone has to do it.
9 years later, and we're still not letting it go in the family group chats. So,
well, without the Dad Lee being able to join us, we decided to go with Plan B, and that was inviting Satir Shah to join us here on the C4 podcast. If you don't already follow him, first of all, on Twitter, it's at Satir Shah. I can't imagine any one of our listeners not following him. But he is a host with Sportsnet 650, one of the local networks in town. And Sat is by far a good conversationalist. He is going to go and probably talk your ear off. And the greatest thing about that is we will spend, I think, about, 30, 45 minutes with him, and you will be left wanting more. Agreed?
Agreed.
But when he does join us, we're going to talk a little bit about the world events as they are. I mean, I think it is important to hear, you know, Sat's thoughts on the issue. We'll talk a little bit about the events of the day in the world of the Vancouver Canucks with the director of amateur scouting, Judd Brackett, no longer employed with the team. That all going down last week on Friday, which is, you know, in the world of the Vancouver Canucks, the best time to send out your press releases. And then we'll maybe touch on Canucks Twitter. And that's a personal topic for me, because any chance I get to talk about the good old days is one I have to take. And I don't know, some bits and bobs and other loose ends that we might be able to get into. But we will be right back with Satir Shah.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? And that? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
So we're pleased to be joined by Satir Shah, a voice you are accustomed to listening to on Sportsnet 650's The Drive Show, host with Andrew Walker. And I would suggest, not to put you in a tough position, you're the more well-liked person in that partnership. And I'm not taking a shot at Andrew outside of the fact that it seems that's the cool thing to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, Andrew takes a lot of shots, so that's nothing new. And I've known Andrew for a long time, so I'll just let him be the bad guy. That's all right. But no, I mean, it depends on the day. Sometimes I can draw the ire of people too. So, you know.
Yeah, well, that's sort of like us. Like Anna and myself, we're the nice people, and then there's Matt.
Yeah, yeah, I'm impartial here. I work with that evil one. I work with the evil Matt in the past, so I understand.
The backstory here, Sat and I do have a previous working relationship together back from our days at the Black Tower. He was at 101 and I was at NW at the time, and we were both sort of cutting our teeth, learning the ropes, as it were. And then Sat moved on to the greener pastures, and look at him now. He's literally on our TVs on Sportsnet Canuck broadcasts every night. So it is amazing for me to see, just from a personal perspective, to see the success Sat has had. And Sat, it's well deserved as well. So congrats to you, buddy. And it's great to actually be reuniting for like a brief on-air chat with you for the first time ever.
Well, yeah. Well, number one, I appreciate that. That's really kind of you to say. I've been super lucky to be here, but super excited to talk with you guys because, you know, Matt, I've always followed your work. I know you're an astute mind, and Chris and Anna as well. I know you guys from social media. So I'm hyped to talk some sports and whatever else you guys want to chat about today.
Cool. Well, you know, you have raised a good point. We are the longest running Canucks podcast out there. And we've got like 2 months on Pucks on Net. But I would be remiss. I think you have a podcast as well with Alex Auld, do you not?
Or? Yeah, it is the Canucks pod. And when hockey comes back, if it comes back, we're going to resume that as well. So it's been kind of on pause because there's been no, you know, Canucks to talk about right now. But yeah, the Canucks pod with myself and Alex Auld, formerly of the Vancouver Canucks. Hopefully, if we're lucky enough to get hockey back, we'll get that going again too.
So we'll get into the show stuff in a second, or we'll get into the Canucks stuff in a second. But obviously, Sat, like a couple months now, you've had a chance to sort of look back on the pandemic and everything. It brought the sports world to a standstill. I'm curious, from a sports show host perspectives, how has like the preparation for these shows really changed? It has not just become more of a sports show, but it's been kind of like a global show. You're covering global events. I've heard, you know, sometimes you see Dr. Bonnie Henry's press conferences on air these days. It's almost kind of like the Twilight Zone, because you're seeing things on a platform that you're not necessarily used to seeing over the years. So for you, from a show host perspective, how has things sort of changed for you guys?
In some ways, the show's become more personal, right? Because we're talking about real issues that are affecting all of us, and we're trying to get through and navigate this all together. And a lot of the questions people ask about work and their day-to-day is what the sports world is dealing with. So there's a lot of overlap and trying to come back, or what's right, what isn't right, what's essential, what isn't, how much risk are we willing to take, how much is money actually worth at the end of the day, how important is family. So all these issues are actually a lot easier to talk about because they're the insecurities we all have right now, the anxieties we're feeling, or and whatever it is. So it's very similar in that regard. And we've tried to have more fun overall, right? Like, we do have fun talking sports all the time, but try to lighten it up a little bit too, and just have a good time. Not ignore what's going on. We talk about it, and it's a real thing, and be honest about that, especially with your audience, and try to connect in that way. But just try to have fun and talk about things normally you wouldn't talk about, and let loose a bit more. So it's actually been, as far as conducting the shows, we've had some of the most fun shows the past 2 months, because we just been kind of letting loose and being creative and trying different things, and not being, I wouldn't say afraid of trying things in the past, but when sports are going on, you fit into the structure with how things are supposed to go. There is, the games are always happening. So there's a preview, there is the review, there is the, you know, projections, trade talk, or this guy might get fired. There's so many things that go on a day-to-day basis that take up so much of your time, and that's all gone. So it's allowed us to just go and just do fun radio. And I've really enjoyed it, to be honest.
And Sat, maybe talk a bit about how the audience have responded to that. Like, what's listener engagement been like? Have you found it more fervent now that they don't have sports, or what's the tone been like?
Well, obviously there are less people listening when there are no sports, and a big reason why is, well there's no sports to talk about in the general sense, so some people may tune out to some degree. And also, when you're at home now and you're not driving to work or you're not working and being able to listen as much, it takes away a lot of that audience. So a lot of our listeners now podcast and we'll hear about it after the fact, but there is engagement. There has been a really good connections with the listeners that are listening every day because they feel like it's part of the normal. So in some ways, we've grown a closer relationship with some of our listeners who've been there every day, essentially, or semi-regularly. And they feel like us doing what we do every day presents something normal in their lives. And listen, we're not heroes in any way, but it's allowed us to connect with people because they see that we're still there. And now that connection has become so much more important. And now when you look forward to listen, it's more about the people and what we have and the inside jokes and everything else that goes on a day-to-day basis that draws you in as opposed to just sports. So in some ways, yeah, Anna, we have been able to get a closer relationship with those who have been listening.
Nice. So, nice to hear.
Sat, let's get into the most Canucks related news of the last week or so. And now you've had a few days to sort of digest and seeing the fallout reaction from it. This is a story that you've obviously followed almost from day one when it started to become a bit of a rumble around the last year's draft. And it's relating to Judd Brackett. Of course, Vancouver Canucks announcing last week that Judd Brackett will step down from his post as director of amateur scouting once his contract runs out. You've, again, followed this very closely. What has your sort of overall sentiment been like in following what has been the most interesting drama related to the Canucks front office over the last few months?
Well, like almost everything with the pandemic going on, morsels of news become so much bigger and greater. Now, this was an important story from day one. And I think one important fact, because people that want to make it seem like it's just blown completely out of proportion, people were passionate about this in January and February before hockey was shut down. People cared about this because inherently a lot of Canucks fans have cared deeply about the drafting and scouting because it's been one of the things you've been so excited about. It's one of the things you're so proud about. In the darkness that you went through when the team was missing the playoffs regularly, you had hope that the scouting was going to get you through it. Patterson, Hughes, the other guys you might be able to get through, and faith that at the very least, no matter what, you could bank on them being above average in the draft. And now when a person who, whether you think it's fair or not, has received a lot of the credit for how good the drafting has been, and also in a bigger sense, has been able to execute the type of organization you want in the scouting department by having a lot of cooperation, collaboration, working people properly, having the debates, but trusting people to do their jobs as well, and really elevating and pushing each other to become a lot better as a scouting department. When the leader of that department is all of a sudden at odds with the greater management group, and there are already questions about how the relationship management has been in the past with other members, whether it's Trevor Linden, what happened even before that with people exiting, to some degree, departures from organizations are normal. The question here with a lot of things we've seen, is there some abnormality when it comes to the practices of the GM within the frameworks that he's trying to execute his job? And is he a forward-thinking front office man who can get alignment in his front office? And to be quite honest, from what we've seen with all the discord, that's become very public, and that in and of itself should tell you it's not exactly processing properly in the front office. So when you look at that entire aspect of things, my biggest question is Jim Benning capable of leading an organization with full alignment and keep people aligned? Not to say you can't debate and provide other viewpoints, which that is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be confident enough to accept other viewpoints, but it comes down to leadership and whether you have faith that they're going to be able to get it right from this point on. At this point, everybody Jim Benning wants is in the organization. So if there's no alignment from this point on, that's going to answer a lot of questions. If there is, well, we'll see if their plan works out.
I feel like we had this conversation when Trevor Linden departed, though, is that maybe there is full alignment within the organization. And here we are almost, you know, 1 year, yeah, 2 years later, where it's another voice, a key voice at that table who's leaving the organization. So, I mean, the other one I wanted to ask is, like, how much of a role does John Weisbrod have to play in all of this potential drama? I mean, what have you sort of followed from that?
Well, that's a big question, because depending on who you ask and which, you know, if you talk to an aggrieved party in situations over the years or somebody who's in support, you get some different answers. So I'd say that John Weisbrod, so let's rank people of importance in a front office, right? Mm-hmm. In a hockey office. Jim Benning's a GM. Number two is John Weisbrod. And then from that point on, it becomes a debate. And, you know, obviously Chris Gere has elevated, and now he's an assistant general manager. So he falls in there as somebody who has a voice. And from that point on, it's really hard to navigate, because I'm not sure how big of a voice Stan Smeal has right now, for instance. And does that mean that Ron DeLorme now has a bigger voice, who, when we look at his track record in the past as a scouting director, hasn't exactly been glowing? So there are some questions now about what the alignment looks like. How much influence does John Weisbrod have? And ultimately, is that vision going to be something they can execute? And the question you pose, Matt, and is a correct one, because we thought after Lindon left that here's an opportunity to have alignment and get the guys you want to work the way you want, and you saw it didn't happen. Is the history dictating what we should expect, or will it now be different this time around? You just hope that it works out, because look at some of the young guys this team has. Like, we should be sitting here talking about how exciting the future for the Canucks is, but now we're talking about some front office issues, some cap issues, and everything else going on. And it is a tough thing to navigate, especially in a pandemic, because future is uncertain with the sport as it is. And if you bring it back to the realities of the sport itself, not that anybody cares about the salary cap, but it's going to impact what you're going to do from a team building aspect. So now all of a sudden this front office is in a difficult situation, and it comes down to how much faith you have that they're going to figure it out. And it's not an easy thing to navigate. You just hope they can salvage it and do something positive, because like I mentioned, with Elias Pettersson, with Quinn Hughes, I mean, look at Brock Besser, Paul Horvat, and go through Adam Godin and some of the other guys they have coming up. It should be a future you should be excited about. And the trepidation from a lot of fans comes from a lack of trust that they'll get it right.
The current question I have, and it's actually relating back to how, you know, one, pandemic aside, this is something that's been talked about in Vancouver since the really start of the calendar year and a little bit before that. Is this a story in any other Canadian market, or is this just a Vancouver special, as we might want to call it?
I think it's a very nuanced and layered situation, because Vancouver is a very unique market in how it consumes the hockey team and how, mm-hmm. you know, the discourse evolves and kind of grows on social media, how fans think and the level of appreciation for the team. And I think what gets lost is, yes, the city, when the team's good, it becomes a bandwagon team. A lot of people jump in, but there is a big core fan base. When you look at the TV numbers, even through down years, they still have big numbers. Now, it wasn't 500,000 like they had during the glory years, for instance, but they still have big numbers because there is a big fan base. So there becomes a really unique situation when the teams do really good, then people would jump on the bandwagon and there's even more attention. So positive stories become so much greater. But all of a sudden, when you come down to the nitty gritty and like the core fan base, which is large, and they care about the minutia of the team. And when you've had 5 years of missing the playoffs in a row, essentially, right? And you've had a lot of problems with the team, and you've only been looking forward to the draft itself. And again, I think it's nuanced and layered because of how much focus we put on the drafting aspect of the team. And that fans really care. Now, is it also a market that when they pick their sides, they're hard to come, you know, hard to move from those sides? It's true. When somebody pitches their flag in an area, like that's where you're at. So you're viewing the lens through whatever view you've kind of put yourself through. So I think that created also a lot of fighting between Jim Benning, pro Benning, anti Benning. And one thing people agreed on for the most part was, hey, the drafting is good. Like, you know, it's that whole like enemies thing. And then we shake hands. At least we could all agree that drafting has been solid. So I think because that has been shaken, that's caused a lot of issues. And it's also a very vocal fan base that, you know, gets a lot of attention on social media. So it has been bigger, and because of the pandemic. So the way I view it is, it's like a 7 as far as a story scale goes for importance, and it probably hit a 9.5 because of the pandemic.
In terms of Vancouver being unique, as an organization, do you read it as unique that the GM, the AGM want to be so involved in the drafting setup and the scouting personnel, or is that just common ground, or is that something we just should have expected from Jim Benning's background?
Well, I think generally speaking, GMs don't have time to be scouts. Like, if you're scouting, you're a scout. You're a GM, you have other things to worry about, right? You don't have the time to go and scout. Now, obviously, you're going to go and check out certain events, and you're going to be keeping an eye on guys, and you will go out and see what you can, because it's important to understand what's going on. But if the GM is going to be focusing a lot more on scouting, that means somebody else in the organization is going to be has to carry the hockey ops aspect of things more. So if the AGM and the GM are going to be focused more on scouting, who's going to be more focused on the pro aspect of the team, the other things the GM and the AGM should be doing? Because I like Chris Gear a lot. Bright guy. He does a great work with the contract stuff. But, you know, he'll probably be the first one to tell you he's not going to be the guy that goes out and make trades. His work is very specific to being contract-wise. So I think if the GM is planning on running the scouting and the AGM is running the scouting itself, they're really stretching themselves thin as far as running the front office as a whole, because it's not the biggest front office to begin with. So to me, if you're looking at success for the future, it doesn't seem prudent for the AGM and the GM to be running the draft. Now, we'll see what happens, who they hire for the director of scouting position, because it hasn't been determined yet if they bring somebody else in from outside the organization or promote somebody. But Anna, you're not going to see many organizations where the AGM and the GM are running the scouting department and being GMs. That's the reason you have a scouting director.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was going to sort of follow that question up with sort of a comment that Jim Benning had made, is that he makes the decision. And I get that, you know, he's the buck stops here guy. Good decision, bad decision. It's the GM who ultimately talks to ownership, or if there's someone in between. But he did comment on how he is sort of active and involved. So if that's the case, and your director of, let's say, amateur scouting is saying, we want player X, what influences a GM to say, actually, I'm more liking player Y? Like, is that based on, you know, your director of amateur scouting or director of scouting just pushing through a series of reports for the GM to digest? Like, I would have thought Judd would have had that autonomy to say, here's the guy, here are some other options, but ultimately, I think this is who we should pick. And Jim seemed to indicate, no, he's the one who makes that call.
So I don't think the drafting list stuff, Chris, was really a big issue. I don't think that, you know, obviously Jim had an opinion on guys, and it's been, you know, it's been documented through various people that he liked Cody Glass, for instance. Now, does that mean he would have pushed it through 100% and gone against everybody to pick him over Pedersen? Not necessarily. There were other voices, and it's not like he got in people's way to pick Cody Glass. So I do think one of the reasons I think they get upset about that Pedersen versus Cody Glass thing is because they did defer to the scouts and take Pedersen at the end. And even if, you know, Jim wanted somebody else, they did allow the organization to get the guy they want. I do think that it's okay for a GM to, you know, he's a GM of the team. He's going to, you know, have a say on who's going to get picked with the first and the second pick. But I don't think this was a scouting list issue. Like, I don't think who they picked in the first round and the second round, especially in 2017, 2018, and even 2019 in the first round, was really at odds with what they wanted to do. Did perhaps Jim get his way on some picks to some degree? Yeah. Was it out of the norm with how things work in the NHL? I don't think so overall. And like that whole issue, I don't think Judd also wanted complete control over the draft. I think he understood that it is collaborative. The GM will have a say, and you're all working together on figuring out what the draft list is. And it's not like, I don't think, now again, that's what Jim Benning said. He said that Judd wanted full autonomy of the first and the second of the draft and not running by the GM. At least that's what he insinuated. I've heard that that's not the case. Comes out of who you believe is right in this situation about that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, from what I've heard too, and we had Jim on the show last week, and I even asked him, I'm like, you know, from what I gather, Jim, the issue wasn't a draft list stuff, you know, is it fair to say? And he said, no, that is fair to say. So he has also admitted it, even though he said something else. Like, so it is a little murky what the truth truly is. Yeah. But I don't think that was an issue. I don't think that, my understanding is who they picked in the first and the second round, especially since 2017, wasn't what got in the way. It's overall collaboration about who gets hired in the department and how things are structured overall. If you're the director of scouting, you have some expectation that you will be involved in the hiring and firing process of your scouts. I think that Judd didn't feel like he was part of that towards the end. Now, Jim Benning can also make the point that, hey, this is my regime. This is how I run things. And if you don't want to, you know, work in this environment, then you don't have to work in this environment. And I think one thing that's pretty evident in this is that Jim is getting his way. Jim isn't just some guy who, you know, is kind of, oh, shucks, you know, do your own thing. Like, he's clearly dictating things behind the scenes. And clearly, if you don't get aligned with them, you're not going to be in the organization. That's not to say that if you have an opposing opinion, you're cast out of the organization. But if you don't agree with how business is conducted, it doesn't look like Jim Benning's the guy who's going to sit by and let that happen.
We'll move on from the Judd talk in a second here, Sat. But I think for me, the most frustrating thing is Judd was elevated to almost myth-like status among Canucks fans, that he was the secret sauce behind the draft table. And it was frustrating because over the years, we've seen the Canucks themselves make Judd available to the media. Even in their own content, they showcased Judd and how much, like, say he had at the table. It was like the Canucks also put Judd in that position and then wanted to claw that back a little bit. I mean, for me, that seems to be the frustrating thing. Like, we had the hashtag "In Judd We Trust" trending for so many years, you know, with the success that we've seen with Pettersson and Gaudette. And like, for the Canucks to sort of say like, no, you might not get that autonomy. I mean, I think that's the bizarre thing. So, I mean, for you, how do you think that the Canucks as an organization handled the Judd Brackett situation?
Well, I think if you look at how it was handled, especially the past few months with everything, not great. It was pretty obvious that if he wasn't going to be in the organization, make a move, and it became a big story, and you waited so long before you made an announcement on something. And hey, listen, you're running your organization. At the end, they were consistent in their
non-messaging.
Non-messaging to some degree, even though Jim did. It's not like Jim never commented on the contract. I mean, he told me that he made a two-year offer to Judd Brackett a few months ago. So it's not like he hasn't commented on the contract situation. But they weren't exactly motivated to get a deal done. That was very evident from where the negotiations went. So my thing was, if you're not motivated and it's clear that things aren't working out, why not sever things? Like, if you're running the organization, you want to run things the way you do it, then do it. Be authoritative about it. Don't let things leak out to the media. Don't let things fester so they become acrimonious and all of a sudden you have the he said, she said come through the media. And I know somebody listening is like, well, you're being hypocritical, Sat. You're reporting on things in the media, adding fuel to the fire. But it's like, if things start coming out and people who are in prominent positions tell you things in the media, that's a sign of things not going great. Because if things are going well, or at least as if you can grit your teeth and get through it, you're not going to be, you know, saying bad things about your organization to people in the media. Are going to be saying it publicly. So that in and of itself tells you that there isn't full alignment or at least agreement and respect in how things should get run. And my biggest disappointment, and again, Judd Brackett falls into the managerial aspect of things because he was part of management as a director of scouting. So I'm disappointed they couldn't keep managerial alignment through all this. I think it's very disappointing that they couldn't do it. Will it sink the front office? Will they, you know, suck in his organization forever? Or are they doomed to fail? I mean, we're going to find out. I don't think it's going to necessarily be that bad. But like, I understand where the questions come from. And you hope they can get it right from this point on. There are two sides to this story. And I think we've been pretty fair in presenting both of them. And I think Jim presented his last week.
One thing that people are pulling out of the statement is, you know, from the Canucks is saying that, you know, the GM is the one responsible for making the decisions. Do you think that it was a big factor, the fan and media perspective, or a factor at all on kind of letting Judd go? Do you think that really bugged Jim, or has that been overblown?
I mean, that's so hard for me to say, right? And I think people can have their opinion on that, right? And I think it's a very fair question, especially with what Matt was mentioning. He was part of the messaging for the team, and they were selling him, and all these things were happening, and you know, they were fine with it because it was showing the organization in a good light, and good things were being said. So they capitalized on that to some degree. I'm not sure if it. I can see the correlation, obviously, because hey. Did his reputation get too big? Did he want too much? Did he feel all of a sudden like he should be more important to us than he actually is? And the other side is, you know, do they respect me the way they should? You know what I mean? Are they taking stuff away from me? I think what happened is Judd feels, from what I can gather and the people I've talked to, that his landscape changed with how things happened over the past years. Like, he wasn't being included in the way he was included in the past. So that's obviously a big frustration. So I don't know if it's about, you know, egos necessarily, but it's a fair question to ask, because what else is it to get in the way? Like, unless Jim mentioned, Judd was being so unrealistic and all of a sudden was demanding that he essentially runs the scouting all to himself and he wanted full autonomy and they didn't want to answer to Jim or whatever. And he was being, you know, illogical about it. Then yeah, okay, you understand. It doesn't seem like that was the case. So the question is, what got in the way? What issue got in the way? Was it personal? Was it because they felt like, you know, Judd was getting too big? Or was it simply a disagreement about hockey philosophy and how a front office should be run? How somebody has a vision and the other one just couldn't get along? And those are the possibilities of what happened. And, you know, I certainly hope, Anna, that it wasn't an ego thing that got in the way, because that's not a sign of a good organization. Let me just put it that way. I hope that's not the case.
So how long does it take for Judd to find a new job?
Well, I mean, I don't think it takes long, depending on what he wants to do. And yeah. I think he's one of those guys that's going to have an opportunity. And there are a number of organizations who are interested in him. Now, to what capacity, I don't know. And is he going to get a scouting director job right away? Will he get another job with a different title on top of that elsewhere? I mean, that's hard to predict. But I can guarantee you that if he wanted to work as a scout, he'd be working tomorrow. No, you know, like he's not going to have a hard time getting that job. But I don't know if that's decided yet, because I think if he's, you know, if I'm putting myself in his shoes, and this is not me reporting anything, you know, from that camp or anything, but that you probably want to take a little pause here and kind of see what happens. Seattle obviously is just around the corner. Let's see what happens with the pandemic and things, you know, because right now some teams aren't sure how much they're going to invest in scouting, what they're going to do, because what are you going to be scouting next year with we don't know what's going on with hockey, for instance. So it's not a bad thing to be a little patient to see what unfolds, but I think that you're going to see him land on his feet in a prominent position at some point here after his contract with the Canucks runs out at the end of this month.
Yeah, I can see Seattle happening just to drive Canucks fans crazy.
In Gate 16 on our Discord, that was the topic of the day today, is Judd yet in Seattle? Because that's, I think for us as our community, Seattle is the big worry. Seattle's going to have Trevor Linden, Mike Gillis. They're going to somehow get Petey out of our hands. Judd, you know, racket. Like everyone's going to Seattle. And they'll somehow win a cup, and it'll be the end of times.
Well, so hopefully not. And that's why you hope. I mean, even if you are someone who does not believe in Jim Benning and what he does, I think you hope they get it right, because there, like I said, there is this opportunity here with what they have, and I hope they do get it right, because like you mentioned, Chris, like the last thing you want to see is all of a sudden Seattle coming in and them having a better chance of having success. Now, perhaps they don't get the hit list of ex-Canucks who are much debated on Canucks Nation, with Canucks Nation, but I do think it would be pretty embarrassing if Seattle hits the ground running and they're a better team than you are. So I'm certainly hoping that they get this right, because Canucks fans deserve it, man. You've been waiting for a long time for this team to get better again, and these guys are really good. Like Elias Pettersson is really good. Quinn Hughes is amazing. Like those are real building blocks to have a franchise centerman, a franchise defenseman who are in their early 20s in a league which is all about that type of play. That should be super exciting, right? Like that should be super exciting for everybody in this fan base. So
Before we move on to Canucks Twitter, Seth, like, and we'll be brief on Canucks Twitter. You bring up a good point. I mean, I've been sort of tooting the horn for a while about how exciting it has been to see Hughes and Pettersson like right in the wheelhouse, early 20 players in a league where it is evolving around young 20 players. If there's a bold statement out there, like, do you have a bold take on how quickly the Canucks are going to get back to contendership, if it were?
Man, like I see the possibility for this team to be really good in 2 or 3 years with the building blocks they have. The question comes down to the execution of it, right? Now, let's be fair. Some of the pro moves have been a lot better. The trades they've made have been a lot better. Now, we can talk about the valuation on the JT Miller trade, but identifying him coming in and being as good as he was, that's excellent. We've been waiting for Jim Benning to make a big trade, a bold trade that actually works out positively. So give him credit on that one, right? Tanner Pearson was a good swap. And Tyler Myers, a contract we can talk about, and it is problematic. I understand. I get it. But he is a competent defenseman. Now, when you put a competent defenseman in a top pairing role or playing as much as he has in certain times, well, he's going to have his mistakes. But if you put him in the right position, he's a defenseman that can help you. So I see some possibilities here that they could be an okay team. But can you navigate the cap situation? Can you make one more good trade? And are you a couple of prospects away from being good? The possibilities all there. I'll still say, yes, they have a chance of being really good in 2 or 3 years because of the foundation that's already there. That if they just get, you know, one more defenseman who's young to step up, whether that's a Brogan Rafferty or Jet Wu or Jack Rathbone, if he signs and hopefully signs, like if one of those guys can step in and be good in a year or two, if you get one to put Colson and Hoglander to be impact players and Gaudette continues to move the way he does, then all of a sudden the building blocks are there. And if you're holding on to Markstrom and Demko's actually decent, it's not like you're looking at a ton of additions that have to be made for this team to be good. There are some internal things that could break right. But that's hoping all those things break right, and that's why you're going to need a couple forward-thinking moves to make sure and ensure that you're a competitor in 2 or 3 years. I'm an optimistic person at heart, so I'll lean on my optimism and say, yes, they'll be contenders in 3 years.
Nice. Chris, you want to take this one on Canucks Twitter? I know you love the tinfoil hats.
Okay, well, no, it's not so much tinfoil hat. I'm just old and I've been on Canucks Twitter longer than most. You look at Canucks Twitter today, it's been polarized. Even we go back to about 2009 is sort of when the polarity started to occur. The simple issue at the time, simple as it was, Team Schneider, Team Luongo. We get into, obviously, 2010, 2011, that took root. And then from there, it just morphed into all sorts of different things. Since then, we've had Team Gillis. I don't even know who the Gillis replacement was, but you've got our Team Benning, Team Tank, Team Playoffs, Team Clayoffs, former host Clayton.
Right.
I wonder if this is, again, back to that earlier point I raised, is this a Vancouver thing? I will be the first to admit I'm a biased Vancouver sports fan. I could care less what happens outside of Vancouver. Mm-hmm. When Canucks aren't in the playoffs, if I have a hockey game on the TV, it was because there was absolutely nothing else, including replays of the Canucks in the playoffs being on. So I see Canucks Twitter as it is today, and it's like, holy smokes. You have maybe not been involved as long as that, but I would suggest you've been more involved since you've been on. And I'm going to, use you as the sage voice who can take a step out and look at it. So what can you use to describe Canucks Twitter as?
Well, it is adversarial. I think that's one good way of posing it, whether it is towards people who slight the Canucks or the fan base one way or another, and internally with the camps you mentioned, Chris, who are aligned against each other, right? So, but I think overall, yeah, Canucks Twitter is hotter than other Twitters. Now, you can look at it and say it's entertaining, and you love it, and hey, that's fair enough, because that's a form of entertainment today. People, love the confrontational aspect of things, and you see people really, like we mentioned before, pick their sides and go at it. And we've seen the same battles for years on Canucks Twitter. That happens in other fan bases too. Is it a bit more intense on Canucks Twitter? I do think that could be a fair statement, Chris. But I will say this. Look at all the issues in the world. One of the big problems we have overall is that people pick their sides and don't want to accept anything that goes against their thinking. And that inability to look beyond your opinion on a greater scale, I'm not saying everybody's like this. There are a lot of forward-thinking people on Canucks Twitter who are open-minded, who change their minds and have good discussions. It's not a generalization. But the overall theme is people pick their sides and are battling to death over things. And they're not looking at reason or facts that will go against their thinking because they're afraid of losing the clout they've built up. Whether it is political clout, if you're into the whole political aspect, or just the clout you have on your Twitter handle or whatever it is. Look at how politicians delve into things. It's all about political clout. It's all about rallying their fan base or not and winning elections or get reelected. And everything you see is confrontational from the media now. Go back to, Crossfire on CNN? It was a debate show built on opposing opinions, not agreeing, and just arguing, yelling at each other. And that's the type of opinionated talk and sports talk you've seen over the past few decades. So it's not a surprise that the fan base is mirroring greater society and how they talk about subjects and matter. So if you see the political landscape be like that, why would sports not be like that? Mm-hmm. And overall speaking, sports does also draw a lot of people who aren't the smartest, right? And listen, I'm a sports fan myself. I'm not sitting here saying, I'm stupid, but I'm not sitting here saying I'm smart. But you have a lot of people who are sports fans who think they know things, but really don't know what they're talking about. And it's fine in the sports realm to go out and say your opinion, because who cares? It's all made up of fiction anyways. But people have those opinions about real things without being educated on them one way or another. So to me, Chris, my answer is yes, Canucks Twitter is unique, but how that engagement goes adversarially is a microcosm of our greater society, in my opinion.
Well, to follow up on that, and this is more on the purview of the team, players, the organization. They, players, even management said, "Oh, I don't pay." I mean, the old story is, "I never read the paper," and you knew they totally read the paper. I don't listen to the radio. I'm pretty sure they listen to the radio. Now you have social media, and you have a lot of the younger players who some are more active than others. This noise and this conversation is constantly occurring. In fact, I would imagine the players, once their Twitter account is discovered, get tagged in everything from I love you to I hate you to buy this, sell that, or just the random tags. How much of that has an impact on, one, the players themselves who are here, but then, two, contributing to a player's perception of the market? Because you often hear, no one wants to go to Vancouver because of X, or Toronto because of X.
I think it's super nuanced because it depends on the person to some degree. But I think it's undoubtedly true that in today's day and age, especially if you are a young player who consumes social media, you are going to be exposed to a lot more criticism about you and a lot more critique of your performance overall. And I don't care who you are and what you do. If you're paying attention to a lot of the critique and about you, it's going to get to you at some point. Like, you need to pause and get away from it. My biggest lesson would be stay away from as much of it as you can. If you're a player nowadays, like, don't check, like, as much as I want people to be interactive and stuff, but don't check your mentions that much. You know what I mean? Be really selective with what you interact with and what you don't interact with and stuff like that. But I do think it has an effect on people's decisions. It's not necessarily a deal breaker, I don't think, because money ultimately for hockey mm-hmm. plays the biggest part. You know, that's going to be it. And, you know, your desire to win to some degree is going to play a part into it. But I do think that some players have a hard time dealing with it and have to shut down their accounts or, like, are affected negatively by it because they try to avoid it, but they become insecure because they look at how much attention they're getting negatively. And they're just, it's almost like you can't help but go and look because you're hoping to find positive reinforcement. You know what I mean? And then you're trying to fill that absence of positive reinforcement, right? And you're trying to figure it out. And I think that can really snowball on you as an athlete. So you got to be really careful what happens. But I do think it plays a part into the tertiary reasons as to why you will go to a market or not. And if you are coming to Vancouver, generally speaking, you know, you are getting briefed on what it's like to be a player and what you should or shouldn't talk about. Or not what you should or shouldn't talk about. I don't think anybody's policing these players, but suggesting, for instance, if you're David Booth, yeah, don't go and post pictures of you going out and hunting. Hunting is illegal. I know it's illegal. I understand it's legal, but in Vancouver, that's not going to play well, for instance, right? So there is that aspect of things that you have to be prepared of if you're a player coming to Vancouver.
And I know you said it's more like a tertiary reason, but, you know, it's not going to stop a player if the organization is good and the money mm-hmm. is good. Do you think that Canucks Twitter actually responds to the team performance? Like, it's less negative when Canucks are good? Like, I was only vaguely on it in 2011, so I can't really speak to that. Yeah. So I just wonder what your perception of that is.
I do think that no matter what, you're always going to find the whipping boys, right? Like, that always happens in sports. There's going to be somebody who draws the ire, because even when the team is good, there's going to be something. It's human nature to get frustrated about something no matter what. And there is no utopia in the world. And watching a hockey team is not going to be a utopian experience. There's going to be things that are going to annoy you. And for instance, when the team was really good, guys like Macy Raymond still drew the ire of Canucks fans, right? Alain Vigneault drew the ire of Canucks fans when they were still winning. Things like this still happen when they were winning. So, of course, that's going to play a part into it. I do think it matters to some degree, Anna. But also, when the team's doing really good, there are so many more positive stories being written as well. So all the positive things that are coming out, sometimes, you know, overtake the negative noise. It's easier to see when people are gushing over your performance, or you're getting a lot more positive reinforcement, then the negative doesn't look as bad. Because mm-hmm. if you're reading 10 positive tweets but seeing 2 negative ones, you're like, yeah, screw those guys. But if you're seeing like 7 negative tweets and 2 positives, you're like, man, this kind of sucks, right? And that's just an example, for instance. But yeah, even when they're winning, there's gonna be more scrutiny. It's a Canadian hockey market, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. Sat, we are running out of time, but the last question I guess we'll sort of leave you with, and you broke it down last week with Ian McIntyre and Dan Murphy on Sportsnet, but Vancouver, Minnesota, assuming everything gets underway and the play-in series do actually happen, do you got a prediction for us?
I'll say Canucks in 5 because I think they're a very even matchup. I'll give the Canucks the edge, high-end talent up front a little bit, but more than anything, the edge in goaltending. None of us have any idea what to expect after, you know, a 3-month layoff to watch hockey. So anybody who thinks they know, we don't know. We're just flipping a coin here. But looking at it, just look, because I try to break it down just from a pure hockey aspect. And I think defense-wise, huge edge to Minnesota. I don't think anybody doubts that. Canucks have an edge in goaltending. Forward-wise, Canucks have a slight edge. So you can say that it's pretty even overall, obviously. I'll give the edge to goaltending. If I see an even matchup, generally speaking, I'll give the nod to the better goalie, and that's how I view the Canucks and Minnesota Wild. How do you guys see it?
Yeah, I think we're pretty similar on that. We talked about it last week, Chris and I, and that, you know, both quite top-heavy organizations. But yeah, as you say, I do see Canucks top 6 a little stronger than Minnesota. And yeah, defensively, that's always going to be a worry. But as long as Markstrom is healthy, he's bailed us out a lot before. I don't see after this like long pause necessarily that can continue beyond a play-in series. We'll see. But yeah, I think I'm pretty similar to you on that front.
Yeah, in fact, I think I said it was a coin flip. I mean, the only question mark that I had is Markstrom. Do we get the Markstrom that we saw developing this season, or do we see a regression where we maybe a Markstrom that's had too much time off? And the Canucks without a hot goaltender, we've seen this season. It's hard to say this season because we haven't seen this season in a long time. You know, significantly underperform. So
yeah, but although he has been like unlike North American skaters, he has been able to practice. So
yeah, and I think friend of the show. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Seth.
No, I was gonna say no, and he has, and the reality is, nobody's up and playing. Like, you're not joining mid-season. Everybody's starting from scratch. So, you know, nobody has an edge over Markstrom. The only edge anybody has, to Anna's point, are the ones who have actually been on the ice skating before it starts. But if guys get in, say, mid-June and get 2 or 3 weeks of skating in and then get 2 or 3 weeks of training camp in, those 6 weeks should get everybody up to equal speed. But the question is, who's going to get hot early, right? It's always unpredictable.
Right on. I was going to say very quickly, as long as Darby Hendrickson and Wes Walls are not playing for the Minnesota Wild, I'm willing to give the Canucks a chance.
Yeah. No Marian Gabrick hanging outside the red line either, right?
No. Sat, thanks so much for your time, man. We appreciate it. Hopefully we're getting hockey back soon. And thanks for everything that you're doing on 650 and keeping every listener entertained and engaged.
Well, Matt, Anna, Chris, thanks so much for having me on. It was a lot of fun chatting with you guys. And yeah, anytime.
Awesome. Thank you. And just so you know, this elevates you now to friend of the show status. Which...
Yes. Yeah, I'm down.
You don't have to be a friend of Matt to make that happen. So
I'd rather have that feather in the cap.
Awesome. So we'll be right back and wrap things up with the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Wow. That was fun.
Yeah, that was great. Just very detailed discussion. No stone left unturned there with Sat.
The thing that actually impressed me the most, I mean, this actually even goes back to our conversation with Murph, because there are those that would suggest, you know, Murph and Sat are part of house radio and house TV. And there's this perception that house radio and house TV, you know, always toe the company line. I found Sat to be very candid in some of his responses, and you could tell he was being thoughtful in what it was he was saying. I was profusely trying to take timestamps and whatnot in case anything, was leaked. But I found it very compelling, the conversation we just had with him.
I think Sat really, he's fair, I think, is the big thing. You mentioned house radio. Like, I think in the instances where management needs to be held accountable, he had no problem saying that management needs to be held accountable. And I think the big takeaway is that, well, let's just hope that there's full alignment across the board in the organization now for the third time. Third time's maybe the charm. I don't know. But I mean, really a lot to digest in there. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it for a second time, but it is.
You're going to actually listen to the podcast this time?
No, I'm going to actually listen to the whole thing, because not you two mumbo jumbos speaking about me for 45 minutes. I don't know. It was great. And I'm hopeful that we'll get Sat back on the show in the not too distant future.
Well, he is now friend of the show. And once you reach friend of the show status, I mean, we're constantly looking to get you back on the podcast.
We're like the mafia. You can't get out once you're in.
Bros, we've had friend of the show Tom Strantz. We've had friend of the show Dan Murphy. It's a big bandwagon getting full right now.
Yeah, I mean, we have space.
It's just like the Canucks bandwagon. There's always room.
Who else?
Everyone
we,
can get on board.
Are we getting next? I don't know.
Wow. Who should we?
Yeah, listeners, let's take
some suggestions. Where can they email us, Chris?
Well, you can shoot an email to c4canuckshockeyblog.com, but probably the easier way, if you happen to be on Twitter, is at the C4 Podcast, on Facebook, facebook.com/C4Podcast, or better yet, jump into C4 Discord. I mean, we have a vast number of people who are active in C4 Discord, but go to bit.ly, so bit.ly/C4Discord, all caps, and take part in the conversation. It's the easiest way to get to us in real time.
Yeah, we can also share more of the direct line, you know, like if you want to suggest guests, if you want to ask questions of our guests, like that's where you want to reach us. And that's also where the best discussion is. So,
I mean, it's actually what, as I've suggested year over year since we had the Discord around, is what keeps me in tune with hockey when the Vancouver Canucks don't make the playoffs. And I mean, hey, I talked about it to Sat. Canucks don't make the playoffs, I could care less about hockey, but the podcast, as well as the community we have around it, you know, whether it be, you know, Nexus or Bearded Canuck or, you know,
gosh, Joe Canuck,
everyone. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. I'm going to list
so many, like, I mean, who we're going to miss someone out and they'll be mad. But
Killer Sushi, exactly. Well, Dave just Weir, a friend of the show, Anders Lau, who I know is a big vocal guy in the
Loud Brother. Yeah.
There are a lot of cooks in that kitchen, and it's great, great discussion. And like on the topic of Canucks Twitter, it's also like everybody's voice is heard in that room. So I think if you're looking to kind of escape Canucks Twitter a little bit,
yeah, that's a good place to go. It can be a bit overwhelming, Canucks Twitter at times. And yeah, we're not like that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Sat brought that up. He's like, you know, it's sort of, it's very sort of divisive. There's lines drawn in the sand and everyone, you know, is so vehemently behind their opinion. I'm not going to deny that we don't see that in C4 Discord, but the cool thing is everyone sort of respects each other.
Yeah. I mean,
all it takes is for, you know, Nexus and Bearded Canuck to start arguing over, you know, Green and what have you. I mean, that's going to go on until, you know, the end of time, but they both, you know, they both understand and get a kick out of it. And then there's my brother who jumps in and starts stirring up the pot, but just don't
he's a big
ignore fan. That, you know, Olo guy. Oh, so yeah. And again, if you have guest ideas, let us know. I mean, who should we get on? Who, if you guys could, would you get on the podcast?
Well, we already did my dream guest.
Well, I mean, I would presume you want us to follow up with Frankie Corrado.
I was going
to
say.
Frankie Corrado
on his way to Sweden.
Yeah, maybe we should.
A bit of a long-distance relationship you'll have now with him, Anna.
Yeah, but you know, my love for him is strong. It knows no bounds of sea or distance.
This is a good time. Wrap it up, Chris.
But yeah, we are the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, as I mentioned at the top, coming to you live from Full Press Coverage, the new network that is now our home. Please check them out, fullpresscoverage.com, for all of your sports listening needs. Like, if there is a team you follow, I will guarantee you they have a podcast available, but they also do some daily sort of radio style content. So real, real awesome network that we've been able to find a home with. As far as our podcast is concerned, though, you can always continue to tune on every favorite podcast app that you have out there. And if you want to drop a review because you love this podcast so much, or you hate it, as long as it's 5 out of 5 stars, we don't really care. 5 stars,
it sucks.
Yeah, get rid of Matt. Yeah, no problem. We will. It's the reviews, which
I knew the deadly shouldn't have left that review.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out who TDL Schneider lover was. Anywho, Matt, final words of wisdom for all of our listeners.
Canucks in 5, baby. Let's bring hockey back safely. Safely.
How about you, Hannah?
No, that was just awesome from Sat. And yeah, hope to get even more guests in the future. So we don't have to say anything. They say stuff. We look smart.
Well, and I mean, we are by far the smartest podcast out there, at least when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks. Or what was it? I think our new tagline was going to be, we were the best mediocre Canucks podcast.
Yeah, that's us.
You know, hashtag podcast like that.
Mm-hmm. And if you heard under in our new intro, it is the best team that we could afford under the salary cap.
Yeah, that's why Adam is currently on the LTIR. You know,
he's been on LTIR.
Yeah, you thought GMJB's cap management was bad. Look what we got.
Awesome. So on behalf of the aforementioned Adam O'Neill Carter at Adam FOC, Matt Lee at Matt Lee _ 61, Anna Forsyth at A4C03, and myself, Chris at Lightforce, and sign off this magical podcast episode. Thanks, special guest Satir Shah at Satir Shah from Sportsnet 650. With those magical words, we out.